Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Tuesday, the 15th of December, 2009, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. And this is episode 19 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week, we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to report back from the Australian Skeptics National Conference, held in Brisbane a couple of weeks ago. And we'll hear from some of the attendees about why skepticism is important to them. Then in our movie review section, we'll have a look at two new American films, The Informant and Religulous. So for all that and more, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Okay, here's our LGBT news roundup for the last week or so. First up, let's go to Austria, where 3 weeks ago here on Reality Check, we reported that the Austrian government had decided on a registered partnership bill for same-sex couples, but that it still had to be approved by the parliament. Well, I'm pleased to report today that happened last Thursday, the 10th of December, and that the new law will come into force in a couple of weeks from now on the 1st of January 2010. LGBT activists in Austria have said that the new registered partnership law will give same-sex couples about 95 to 98% of the rights of a married couple, and will provide complete equality in areas such as immigration, social security, and inheritance. Now, the main things that same-sex couples will not have access to are adoption and artificial insemination services. Also, same-sex couples cannot have ceremonies when they go in to register, and their registration is done in separate offices from where marriages are performed. Even so, this is very good news coming out of Austria. Not full marriage, not complete equality yet, but a very important step forward nevertheless. Let's move now across the Atlantic to the USA, and specifically to its fourth largest city, Houston, in Texas, where on Saturday, December 12th, voters elected their first openly LGBT mayor, a 53-year-old lesbian called Anise Parker. She's been with her partner now for 19 years, and they have three children. This election makes Houston the largest U.S. city to have an openly LGBT mayor, and I believe the largest city in the world to have an openly lesbian mayor. Other smaller U.S. cities have had openly LGBT mayors, like Portland, Oregon, for example, and Providence, Rhode Island, and other bigger U.S. cities have had closeted gay mayors, like New York, for example, where Ed Koch was mayor from 1978 to 1989. But Houston is now the biggest city in the US to have an openly LGBT mayor. I don't know if she'll be a good mayor or not, but I think this can definitely be seen as an encouraging sign that prejudice and homophobia are gradually, hopefully, diminishing, at least in certain parts of the Western world. Okay, for our final story this week, let's move back across the Atlantic to Africa, and more specifically to Uganda in East Africa, to update you on another issue we reported on here on Reality Check a few weeks ago, and that is the horrible bill currently before the Ugandan parliament that would seriously toughen the already tough laws against homosexuality there, and would introduce the death penalty in some cases of sexual activity between members of the same sex. It would also introduce the new crime of failing to report a homosexual to the authorities, with a penalty of 7 years jail. Nice law, hey. Now, I'm sure you've probably seen in the media that this bill has attracted a lot of attention from around the world. Numerous NGOs, as well as governments and world leaders, have condemned it, including Gordon Brown, Hillary Clinton, and Stephen Harper, the Canadian Prime Minister, and even President Obama chipped in over the weekend, apparently. Many commentators have been linking the appearance of this bill to the influence in Uganda of certain right-wing anti-gay Christian groups from the United States, particularly a US network called The Family. Back in March this year, several prominent anti-gay US Christian activists held a conference in Uganda where they pledged to wipe out homosexuality in the country. So in recent weeks, a lot of the more prominent evangelical preachers in the US have been coming under pressure to denounce the bill. And finally, last week, Rick Warren, probably the most powerful evangelical in the US, finally came out against the bill, declaring it, and I quote, "unjust, extreme, and unchristian toward homosexuals," end quote. By the way, if you're wondering who Rick Warren is, he gave the invocation at Obama's inauguration in January, and he wrote the best-selling evangelical book, The Purpose-Driven Life. He's generally a nasty piece of work and has quite a lot of influence over Ugandan politicians, so that's why it's pretty significant and good that he has come out against the Ugandan bill. Also over the weekend, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams, the head of the Anglican Church, spoke out publicly for the first time against the bill as well, and said that he didn't see how any Anglican could support it. This statement is actually quite significant too, because the Anglican Church has a very strong presence in Uganda, with 36% of Ugandans identifying as Anglican. There were some reports over the last few days that some Ugandan politicians have proposed watering down some parts of the bill, for example, removing the death penalty, but it remains to be seen how this will play out. Apparently, the bill is still up for debate over the next few weeks, so I suspect it's probably not the last time we'll hear about this ghastly bill here on Reality Check. Okay, that's all our LGBT news for today. Let's listen to a song now, and when we come back, we'll find out what happened at the Australian Skeptics National Conference in Brisbane a couple of weekends ago. So for all that and more, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
It's pure Joy 94.9.
Every century, our eyes on the universe have been opened anew. We are witness to the very brink of time and space.
We must ask ourselves, we who are so proud of our accomplishments? What is our place in the cosmic perspective of life? The cosmic perspective of
life. The exploration of the cosmos is a voyage of self-discovery. As long as there have been humans, we have searched for our place in the cosmos.
Are there things about the universe that will be forever beyond our grasp? Are there things about the universe that are ungraspable?
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
As the ancient mythmakers knew, we're children equally of the earth and the sky. In our tenure on this planet, we've accumulated dangerous evolutionary baggage. We've also acquired passion for others, love for our children, and a great, soaring, passionate intelligence, the clear tools for our continued survival.
We must ask ourselves, we who are so proud of our accomplishments, what is our place in the cosmic perspective of life?
We could be in the middle of an intergalactic conversation, and we wouldn't even know. Are there things about the universe that will be forever beyond our grasp? Are there things about the universe that are ungraspable?
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
We've begun at last to wonder about our origins, star stuff, contemplating the stars, tracing that long path. Our obligation to survive and flourish is owed not just to ourselves, but also to that cosmos, ancient and vast, from which we spring. One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
Think of how many stars and planets and kinds of life there may be in this vast and awesome universe.
Century. Our eyes on the universe have been opened anew. We are witness to the very brink of time and space.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was Our Place in the Cosmos, put together by John Boswell at symphonyofscience.com. And that song features the voices of some of the most well-recognized names in science and the popularization of science from the last half century. The late great American astronomer Carl Sagan and the British evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins, as well as the American physicist Michio Kaku and the American cosmologist Robert Jastrow. Now, that's the third song that John Boswell has produced. We've played the other two here on earlier episodes of Reality Check, and if you'd like to hear them and check out the videos that go along with the songs, just visit the website symphonyofscience.com. Right, we're in the part of the show now where we normally get into a skeptical analysis of a topic related to pseudoscience or the paranormal, but today we're going to do something slightly different, although very closely related, and that is I'm going to report back on my visit to the Australian Skeptics 2009 convention held in Brisbane over the weekend of the 28th and 29th of November. I think it was a very successful convention with a number of presentations by interesting speakers, such as Dr. Karl Kruzelnitsky, who is probably Australia's most famous science populariser. Also Barry Williams, who's been involved with the Australian Skeptics pretty much since its founding back in 1980. And Rachel Dunlop from the Skeptic Zone podcast and many, many others. One of the highlights of the conference was the presentation of the Bent Spoon Award. This is an award that goes to, and I quote here, "the perpetrator of the most preposterous piece of paranormal or pseudoscientific piffle." In other words, an award for the dodgiest quack, fraudster or charlatan of the year. And this year it went to Merrill Dorey and the Australian Vaccination Network. Now they're a group of what you could call vaccination deniers. They try to convince people not to get their children vaccinated, falsely claiming that vaccines are very dangerous. And Merrill Dorey and her followers cause real harm in the community because of what they say. And that harm includes the disability and death of children. So, in my opinion, they are very worthy recipients of the Bent Spoon Award. The Australian Skeptics also gave out a brand new award called the Thornett Award for the Promotion of Reason, named after Fred Thornett, a prominent member of the Australian Skeptics who died earlier this year. Now, this is a serious award, unlike the Bent Spoon, which is meant to poke fun at people, and the Thornett Award went to Tony and David McCaffrey, who lost their baby daughter, Dana McCaffrey, in March this year to whooping cough, a disease that is preventable through vaccination. Dana was only 4 weeks old when she died, so therefore too young to have received the whooping cough vaccination. But unfortunately, she lived in a part of Australia, the northern coast of New South Wales, where whooping cough is making a comeback thanks to the lies and misinformation spread by the likes of Merrill Dorey and the anti-vaccinationists. So really a tragic story. But Tony and David McCaffrey received the award because since this horrible tragedy befell them, they have become tireless campaigners for the benefits of vaccination and campaigning against all the senseless anti-vaccination scaremongering and misinformation out there. So another award well deserved. Now, while I was at the conference, I managed to record some snippets with some of my fellow attendees, including some famous names from the world of skeptical podcasting. So I'll play some of those snippets now, and you'll hear the voices of Jason Ball and Jack Scanlon from the Pseudoscientists podcast, produced by the Young Australian Skeptics here in Melbourne. You'll also hear Aran Segev and Kylie Sturgis from the Skeptic Zone podcast, and Aran is also the president of the Australian Skeptics. And finally, you'll hear the voice of one of the presenters at the conference, Martin Bridgestock, who's a senior lecturer at Griffith University in Brisbane and actually offers a course on skepticism, science, and the paranormal. He's been involved with the Australian Skeptics for many years and was actually a joint winner of the Skeptic of the Year award back in 1986. So let's listen to what they have to say now. Basically, I asked them all the same question, why skepticism was important to them. So important that they would even devote large amounts of their own spare time to the cause of promoting skepticism.
Okay, I'm here at the Australian Skeptics Conference in Brisbane, Queensland, and I'm talking, first of all, to Jason Ball from the Pseudoscientists podcast produced by the Young Australian Skeptics. Jason, tell us, what does skepticism mean to you?
Well, I think in one of the talks today, it was summed up really good that skepticism is a process instead of a belief. So, and I think it's a very important process. It's one that we can use to best discern the reality around us. It's a process that involves science, that involves critical thinking, that involves evidence. And I think that the harm from not applying this process can be quite extensive. And I think we also saw that in this convention. There was an award given, the Award for Reason, given to Tony and David McCaffrey, whose daughter was killed by whooping cough because of a whooping cough epidemic that's developed in New South Wales because of the lack of vaccinations, because there's people out there spreading misinformation and fear about vaccinations. So I think what I love about skepticism and what I love about science is that it has checks and balances in it to try and eliminate biases, trying to eliminate politics and ideology from influencing us so we can get as close as we can to a truth. Not that I'm saying it's some sort of objective truth, but I think it works, bitches, yeah.
Thank you, Jason. With us also is Jack Scanlon, another star of the Pseudoscientists podcast. Jack, what do you have to say?
Well, Jason summed it up pretty well, I think. Skepticism. Everyone basically here at the convention is, I would think they would be here because, one, they want to learn about the topics that the speakers are talking about, but also we try and build sort of a community around the process of skepticism. Because the process of skepticism is kind of like a solitary thing in a way, because you do have the peer review process where you have to collaborate on things, but it's kind of an individual mindset. There's no dogma that everyone adheres to. It's good to build a community around that and get everyone to meet and exchange ideas and find what our commonalities are and our differences. Skepticism is just, to me, is just applying a process to what Jason said, to get at the real reality of life. I think we have to try and break down the stereotype of like the scientist in the white coat or the skeptic with the massive beard like Barry Williams, because you don't have to be a stereotype to be a skeptic.
Thanks very much, guys. Okay, joining me now is Aran Segev. He's the president of the Australian Skeptics. Aran, what do you have to say?
To me, skepticism is a way of life. It's a way of looking at the world. For me, it is very important to know whether something is true or not, so I can base my decisions on fact rather than on opinion. It's not that I don't have opinions, but I usually try to have my opinions based on as much evidence as possible, and that's to do with anything in life, really. It's to do with the way I conduct my work, my business, the way I treat employees, the way I conduct my relationship with my family members, especially my children. Education has a lot of evidence base to it, both in terms of how things go on at school and in the family, and these are things that are very important. I think it's very easy to sometimes go into a mode of, I want to do this because it feels good or because it sounds nice, but I try not to conduct my life like that. And I think one of the things I really like, a quote from Carl Sagan, where he was asked by somebody what his gut feeling was about something, and he said, I don't think with my gut, I think with my head. I try to be that way. I know it sometimes sounds a little bit cold, you know, you only use your head, you don't use your emotions and all that, but that's not it at all. It does not, do not deny the emotions and feelings and even opinions that are based on belief that are not necessarily evidence-based. But if you believe something that is not based on evidence, you have to acknowledge that it's not based on evidence and be sure to be able to change your mind if evidence does come to light. I think to me that's the most important thing, being open-minded enough to not stick to my opinions regardless of evidence. That is probably the key to skepticism.
All right, Aran, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, joining me now is Kylie Sturgis from Perth, and she's a regular presenter on the Skeptic Zone podcast. Kylie, what have you got to say?
Hello, Tony. It is wonderful to be here and a great honour to be on your show as well. I don't often get to be on other people's podcasts. More often than not, I'm out there interviewing people, so I should probably be the one interviewing you. Hey, how come we got this the wrong way around? This isn't fair.
But now you're on the other side.
I am indeed.
And so why do you devote your time to skepticism?
Okay. Well, one of the things that I have managed to do is to make skepticism part of the research that I do. It is also part of my job in some fashion. For a start, I am working currently on my education thesis, a Masters of Education at the University of Western Australia, where I'm looking at the educational measurement of paranormal beliefs. Myself and Dr. Martin Bridgestock applied to the Australian Skeptics and got a grant to put 20 questions on the Queensland Social Service Survey, which is, oddly enough, revolving around Queensland, which is where we are right now. We're in Brisbane. The survey went out to 1,243 people, and we managed to get a lot of data on paranormal, pseudoscientific, and conspiracy theory beliefs. Mm. And so the survey will be resulting in a lot of paperwork, hopefully a few journal articles, and also my thesis. We have presented at DragonCon, and people can hear, I believe it's episode 47 of the Skeptic Zone podcast, that you can hear myself and Dr. Martin Bridgestock report on our research. So not only have I managed to allow skepticism to inform the research that I'm doing, but I am going to be a philosophy and ethics teacher next year. So some of the ideas and investigations of the scientific method, how we see science, how we see society, how we see the world, these are the sorts of things I'll be hopefully teaching to my students. And so going to a conference like this, picking up ideas, talking to people, all help contribute more resources to helping the next generation.
Fantastic. Kylie Sturgis, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Hello, everybody. Brilliant show.
Okay, joining me now is Martin Bridgestock, a senior lecturer at Griffith University, and he, in fact, gives a course in skepticism. So, Martin, why is skepticism important to you?
Skepticism is important to me for historical reasons. 25 years ago, the fundamentalists were on the verge of putting creation science into the Queensland science syllabus for schools. That is, that a literal interpretation of the Book of Genesis was to be taught in our schools as though it was science. The Australian Skeptics are one of the few groups that stood up and helped us fight them off, and therefore I have a great debt of gratitude to them. Strictly, skepticism is the responsible scientific investigation of claims of the paranormal. So skepticism involves thinking for yourself, asking why should one believe remarkable things like telepathy or clairvoyance. And I do find with my students that if you can once get them thinking that way about things that interest them so much like the paranormal, then they go on to think about other things like politics or the claims of bureaucrats or almost anything else. So skepticism is not only something that I value because it's a very good defense against strange claims, but in addition to that, it's an absolutely wonderful teaching device. Students are interested in it and one can give them a tremendous amount of understanding very quickly.
Fantastic, Martin. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
So there you have it, dear listener. Voices direct from the Australian Skeptics National Conference in Brisbane 2 weekends ago. Now, I was asking people there why skepticism matters to them, but what about reality check? How does reality check answer the question of why skepticism is important? Why do we spend our free time promoting critical thinking and skeptical analysis? Well, because skepticism makes you feel great. Not only do you feel great when you know how things work and you see things as they really are, you also walk around with a type of force field of protection, a form of self-defense against all those misleading and beguiling claims that people make out there. And also, when you think about it, the only way that human beings will make any progress, both on an individual level and as a species, is by grasping reality, understanding things as they really are. And rational thought, critical thinking, and skeptical analysis is the only way to get close to a real understanding of the world. Whether you want to treat some kind of disease, reduce poverty, travel to another planet, or solve problems on a really grand scale, such as climate change, you can't do it through wishful thinking. The only way is through understanding the reality of the situation and the ways to change it. So, in other words, our purpose here on Reality Check is nothing more and nothing less than saving humanity. Oh, and most other species on the planet as well. Now, before we get into our final song for tonight, if you have any questions or comments about what we've covered on the show, and maybe something you'd like us to cover on the show, please feel free to send us an email. The address is realitychecktony@gmail.com, and that's Tony, T-O-N-Y. You can also visit our webpage too, if you like, where you can find previous episodes of Reality Check to download as podcasts, and that's at realitycheckonline.net. Now, we're going to listen to our final song for today, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie review.
Joy 94.9. Joy 94.9, award-winning radio.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, on Joy 94.9. Also streaming live at joy.org.au. And also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere on your little pod. And the song you just heard there was a very modern song, Evacuate the Dance Floor by German pop group Cascada. All right, it's now movie review time here on Reality Check. And the two movies up for review this week are The Informant and Religulous. Let's start with The Informant. Now, this is yet another production from the unbelievably prolific American director Steven Soderbergh. He's released three films in Australia this year. Che, which was reviewed here on Reality Check, The Girlfriend Experience, which we didn't review, and now The Informant, which we're about to review. The Informant is a comedy based on true events which occurred in the early 1990s and all revolving around the character of Mark Whittaker, played by Matt Damon. He's one of the high-flying executives at the Archer Daniels Midland Corporation in Illinois. He became the whistleblower on a massive international price-fixing conspiracy between Archer Daniels Midland and a number of Japanese, Korean, and French corporations. It was all intended to raise the price of lysine, an essential amino acid added to corn to make it a complete protein to be used as animal feed. Now, does that sound a bit convoluted and maybe an unusual topic for a comedy? Well, I think maybe that's the problem with this movie. Not that it would be impossible to make a good movie out of this material. It could, for example, have been quite a riveting thriller, as shocking information is revealed at various points during the plot, and we discover that things are not as they seem. First, an extortion attempt against the company, then the price-fixing revelations, then the tension mounts as Mark Whittaker goes undercover in his own company, fitted with a wire to get the evidence needed to prove the conspiracy. Then the further revelations of embezzlement and kickbacks as everything spirals out of control, as you don't know who to trust anymore and nothing is what it appears to be. Anyway, you get the idea of what the thriller might be like. It could even have the potential as a very funny comedy. A guy who is completely inept and deluded as the person on whom the whole investigation hinges, bungling every chance they get to catch the bad guys, with everyone around him trying desperately to pick up the pieces and save the sinking ship of the FBI investigation. Or maybe you could go for the angle where everyone around him thinks he's really smart and on the ball and totally in control, but we, the audience, know that he's completely out of touch with reality and bordering on insane. I reckon that any of these approaches could, in the hands of an imaginative director and scriptwriter, have resulted in a highly entertaining and even enlightening movie. The problem with The Informant is that it tries to take a bit from all of those options and then adds a wacky kind of 1970s soundtrack and font and production design, but it just doesn't come together as a coherent whole. It's more of a mess, really. Above all, it's trying to be a comedy, but the scenes and situations are just not very funny. And in fact, the movie ends up getting bogged down in a lot of the technicalities of the price fixing and the FBI investigation and the subsequent legal maneuvering, which I guess is included in the film because it's what really happened. This is based on a true story. And maybe that's another problem with the movie, that they tried to stick to the facts and tell everything as it really happened. But that doesn't necessarily make for gripping viewing. And ultimately, the character of Mark Whittaker at the center of the movie is not really appealing or funny or endearing. He just turns out to be a greedy and manipulative, compulsive liar. And by the end of the movie, I didn't really care what happened to him. So, in my opinion, don't include The Informant on your must-see movie list this summer. However, whereas The Informant is one to miss, our second movie up for review tonight, Religulous, is definitely one to check out. Religulous is a documentary by the American comedian and TV presenter Bill Maher. Now, Bill Maher is probably not that well known here in Australia, but he is quite a famous TV personality in the US, where he currently hosts a TV show called Real Time with Bill Maher on the HBO cable channel. Apart from his comedy and political satire, he is also a prominent atheist, and that's what led him to make Religulous, a documentary about religion. Or more accurately, one that satirizes and pokes fun at the ridiculousness of some of the basic tenets of the world's main monotheistic religions. Ma basically traveled to several countries, including Israel, Italy, the UK, and throughout the United States, interviewing believers in Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, as well as Mormonism, and at one point he even has a jab at Scientology. For viewers familiar with the movie-making style of Michael Moore, Bill Maher's approach is very similar, although he's generally a bit more disrespectful of those he's interviewing and often throws in a snarky remark or two, which is usually quite hilarious. Actually, the film is directed by Larry Charles, who also directed Borat and Bruno, and there are also definite similarities with those movies, particularly in the way that the intent behind most of the scenes is to laugh at the people being interviewed. And just as I enjoyed Borat and Bruno, I also enjoyed Religulous quite a lot and found it pretty hilarious, and I can say it kept me enthralled pretty much throughout the whole movie. Now, if it's not obvious from what I've said so far, let me be very clear. This is not a balanced and considerate examination of the beliefs of the major religions in an attempt to find some common ground and understanding. This movie is about having a laugh at the expense of religious people, and at the same time exposing just how ludicrous most of the fundamental religious beliefs are, especially when you really come down to look at them closely. For example, at one point in the film, Bill Maher visits a shop in Israel that specializes in selling devices designed to allow you to get around the supposed biblical prohibition on doing work on the Sabbath. You know how those ultra-Orthodox Jews are not supposed to turn on light switches or press buttons in elevators or whatever on the Sabbath. But they've designed all these complicated devices that use electrical currents and compressed air and levers and whatever to supposedly get around these prohibitions. So you can actually press the button in the elevator without making Yahweh angry if you use this device. Now, beliefs like that I would categorize as just crazy. And so it's nice to see someone actually come out and say it. Now, some may argue that this is not a helpful approach in the debate between believers and non-believers, that this only really stirs up the pot and antagonizes religious people. And you can make that type of argument too against the tactics of some of the so-called new atheists, like Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens, that by attacking religion so strenuously, they only provoke religious people, the debate becomes polarized, and everyone digs in their heels even harder than before. Now, I can understand that sentiment, but at the same time, I think there is a place for people like Dawkins and Marr, who just come out and say, hang on, let's just have a look at what these people are really saying. Now, that's nuts. That's crazy. You would have to be insane to believe such ludicrous nonsense about Jesus or Moses or Muhammad or Joseph Smith or whoever. And I have to say, in a world where the media are almost always extremely respectful of religious beliefs, it's very refreshing to see someone stand up and tell it like it is. And Bill Maher certainly doesn't pull any punches. At the end of the movie, he basically sums up his whole approach by really condemning religion in no uncertain terms, and saying that if human beings are to survive, with the threats of nuclear war, pollution, climate change, etc., they are going to have to discard the kind of irrational thought processes inherent in religions and start thinking rationally. If not, deluded religious believers will eventually destroy the world. Which is quite a similar point to the one I made earlier about the purpose of reality check. Well, it's nice to see that other people are out there as well, doing what they can to save humans from themselves. Now, maybe my only criticism of the film is when he gets into Islam, and instead of again, showing the ludicrousness of certain of the religion's key beliefs or the logical inconsistencies in some of its fundamental tenets, he seems to imply, as many other Western commentators do actually, that Islam's message is fundamentally about violence, and that's why we see the phenomenon of Islamic terrorists. And he seems to imply also that every Muslim believes in violence against the infidels. And yet, that implication is so far from reality as to be ludicrous itself. I mean, just hang out with some Muslims for a while. Just go and visit any Muslim country. You'll see that, generally, levels of crime and violence are way lower than in most Christian or Catholic countries at a similar level of development. For example, the level of violence in Rio de Janeiro or Sao Paulo is probably orders of magnitude higher than it is in Cairo or Istanbul, for example. Now, not that those differences are all due to religion, that would be too simplistic, but I'm just trying to point out the ridiculousness of the belief that Muslims generally are violent. That is just patently untrue when you look at the evidence. The other scene in the film that annoyed me a little bit was when he visits a bar for gay Muslims in Amsterdam, and there are only two people there. And he hardly lets them speak and implies through his comments that there are almost no gay Muslims and that there is pretty much no gay Muslim community or gay Muslim scene. which is also completely untrue. I know many gay Muslims, and I've been to nightclubs packed with gay Muslims in both Amsterdam and London, and I'm sure there are many more in other cities as well. But ultimately, these are minor criticisms of the movie, and, well, like many of Michael Moore's movies, I guess Religious is not really about making compelled and well-reasoned logical arguments. It's about having a laugh at all those crazy religious people out there, and also hopefully provoking some questions in some of the viewers' minds. And I think it does both of those things pretty well. Definitely a movie worth checking out. But if this sounds like the type of movie you might want to see, I'd recommend going sooner rather than later. It's on limited release in Australia, but has had virtually no publicity and hasn't been marketed by the distributors at all, as far as I can tell. And I suspect that it will probably only be on in the cinemas for 2 or 3 weeks at the most. Which is odd, because it was the highest grossing documentary in the US in 2008. So I don't know why the distributors have decided to take this low-key approach. Maybe they're scared of controversy if too many people find out about the film. Who knows? Now, I can't finish any discussion about the work of Bill Maher without briefly mentioning the controversy within the skeptical community that has grown up around him over the last few months. And that's because this year, 2009, Bill Maher was awarded the Richard Dawkins Award by the Atheist Alliance International for raising public awareness of the non-theist life stance. Now, that may seem perfectly justifiable, especially given the success of the movie Religious. And Bill Maher has undoubtedly been a long-time and influential advocate for atheism in the United States. But the problem is that he doesn't apply skepticism and critical thinking to other beliefs that he holds, about medicine, for example. He has come out regularly on his TV shows in favor of all kinds of wacko cancer cures and other alternative medicine quackery, and regularly rails against vaccination and the evils of pharmaceuticals and so-called Western medicine. This has caused him to become the target of huge criticism amongst skeptics, and many denounced the fact that he was given an award called the Richard Dawkins Award, because Richard Dawkins, probably the world's most famous atheist and skeptic, has been a tireless advocate for skepticism and critical thinking in all fields, including medicine. Anyway, I won't dwell too much on that debate for now. All I can say is that Bill Maher does seem to be able to apply critical thinking pretty well when it comes to religion. And to see him in action doing that, then do go out and check out Religious. And that brings us to the end of the 19th episode of Reality Check on Joy 94.9. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments, or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com and visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. And remember to tune in at 10 o'clock next Tuesday for episode 20. Okay, have a great week, everyone. See you next week.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.